This is a content warning for a conversation about sexual assault and other sexual abuses, which is discussed in relation to the themes of the film It Follows. If this will be triggering for you, please consider if you want to continue listening to this episode. Thank you. It follows. Slowly. Relentlessly. It cannot be killed. It cannot be persuaded. It cannot be stopped. To most, it cannot even be perceived. But it is real, and it is coming. As sure as the sun will shine tomorrow, it will be making its way to you. But what even is it? Well, that's all up to perception. The thing is, we as humans like to believe that there is an objective truth. That somehow there will be something so true that it is self-verifiable. And this is true enough of many things, but also in many cases it just isn't, well, true. This has given contrarians everywhere some validation with all their crazy thoughts. And for a perspective on this film, I'll turn to the king of contrarians, Friedrich Nietzsche. Nietzsche has said many things about perspectivism, the idea that all knowledge of a subject is essentially dictated by the knowledge and perspective of the individuals observing it. Each individual cannot exist outside their own purview. So what is the truth is simply their idea of what the truth is. Let me paraphrase with an anecdote. Earlier today, I saw some photos of the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. I've never been. It was closed when I was in Rome. My knowledge of what the Sistine Chapel looks like is entirely limited to the photos that were sent to me, therefore, not really an adequate perspective to be able to judge how the Sistine Chapel looks. The person who took those photos and sent them to me, our co-host Ian Buckley, would have a far greater knowledge of what the Sistine Chapel looks like, because he's seen it from more perspectives. He's been inside it, seen it from the outside, walked close to the walls, felt the floor under his shoes. His truth, his perspective, is better than mine. With It Follows, David Robert Mitchell, the writer and director, doesn't give any clarity about what it is or why it exists at all. And he's the guy who should know. Is he being deliberately coy to protect the audience from being overinformed before seeing the film? Or has he simply not considered what it stands for? Hard to say. So when searching for clues as to what it is, we must look for context within the film and come to our own conclusions based on our own life experiences and perspectives. Nietzsche would be proud. Is it as simple as a sexually transmitted infection passed on through sex and wreaking havoc upon those who are infected with it? Is it the result of rape culture and slut-shaming? Is it the trauma a victim carries with them after being sexually assaulted? Is it the ever-present awareness of inevitable death? Apart from the intensity of the film's horror scenes, or the tension of knowing that it is always coming for you, the most interesting thing about It Follows is that for each person, it is a unique experience, with each viewer bringing as much of them into the film as the film offers back to them. This Halloween, that feels worth celebrating. I'm Bo Nicholson, and this is Movieversaries. Yes, this is Movieversaries. I'm Bo Nicholson. This is where we celebrate and sometimes reevaluate some of the greatest movies ever on a significant anniversary. On this episode, we're discussing It Follows, the film that proves that sex is the cause of and solution to all of life's problems. On its 10th-ish anniversary, more on that in a second. to help me discuss the film for our Halloween special here at Reviewerseries, it's the world's most reluctant screen queen. I couldn't get that one out. Okay, let me try again. It's Violet Hammond. Hello, Violet.
Hello, it's your favorite final girl.
Oh, the fuck. Yeah, like that's a trope that I'm not that familiar with because, like, Violet, I've got to tell you, I'm not much of like a horror guy. I'm very far from noted author Sean Wilson on this one. He's a horror guy. I'm not a horror guy. Violet, you don't sound like a horror girly.
No, not at all. No, this is, I don't know how I got myself into this. And it was, by the way, dear listeners, all my fault.
yes, all of it. I did say 10-ish anniversary because, dear listeners, your boy, he is jet lagged. And like, I'm not too bad right now because it's been about a week since I got back from Europe. But I was struggling earlier in the week and we were trying to come up with, oh, should we do one this week? And Violet's available. Andy's not. Ian's not. Okay, we'll do something. We thought of a movie and then Andy was like, oh, I really want to be there for that movie. It's like, okay, and well, that's fine.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
He's a much better fit for that movie than I am. So that makes sense. Okay, no worries. And then we got Halloween coming up. It's like, okay, we could do a horror movie. And Violet's like, yeah, cool. No worries. And then chooses It Follows because, Violet, why? Because
I Googled scary movies released in years ending in 5 and It Follows was there for 2015. Now, I didn't look past that because I had heard of this movie. No, I am not a horror movie girl. I am very skittish. I am a big scaredy cat. I get very nervous about horror movies. I am not a fan, but it was spooky season, and I wanted to make the sacrifice, and I trusted our friend Craig when he said I could handle it, and I said, let's do it. And then you and I watched the movie, and then the next morning you said, this is a 2014 movie. And I said, what?
So, according to the rules of our show, we do base it, generally speaking, off IMDb, or like Letterboxd or anything, the official release year of the movie. Now, this movie premiered at Cannes in 2014. It premiered at, it did that. But then it also did like the Toronto International Film Festival and like a whole bunch of other film festivals, the London International Film Festival, which I was just at recently. All of that was in 2014. And then it did release.
It was released in 2015. Yes. So Google misled me. I'm not going to say Google lied to me, but Google misled me somewhat. Yeah.
And I just trusted my friend Violet. So
you did trust me, and I led us both down this path. And oh, here we are.
Let's call it a Halloween special.
It's our Halloween special.
Yeah, because the alternative was something crazy like The Descent or something. And
I said, I know I can't do that. Yeah. I know I can't do that. No. I thought I could do this. And I mean, like, I did maybe 40% of it. But we'll get into
that. Yeah, there may be some vague details coming out of Violet Hammond. She might be saying things like, hey, remember when that clown was in it? And I'm like, nope.
Nope. Well, no, I won't even pretend. I won't even pretend. I'm just going to tell you I had my eyes closed because, dear listeners, I know I had my eyes closed for at least 60% of this movie.
Yeah, and I didn't. Let's get into it. Let's remind our friend Violet what actually happens in this movie.
Yeah, please do.
So Jay, who is played by Micah Munro, is a young woman entering adulthood in suburbia, who turns the heads of every man and boy in that neighborhood. Her dad has died. Her mom seems distant and alcoholic. She has a sister, a friend who is in love with her, and she's seeing a guy named Hugh. Mm-hmm. When they finally have sex, Hugh uses chloroform to knock her out and ties her to a wheelchair in the middle of nowhere. By the way, Violet, I will have given a warning for this sort of content in advance.
Yes, of course.
This is when he explains to her that he has passed on the thing that has been slowly chasing him. The entity, It takes many shapes, but is always a human, usually disheveled, often nude. Mm-hmm. It's walking slowly, but directly at Jay. It can't be killed, it cannot be persuaded, and it can't be seen but by anyone who hasn't been infected.
Yes.
And if it kills Jay, it comes back for Hugh.
Mm-hmm.
This all tracks so far, Violet, this all...
Yeah, no, I was aware. I was in it for this, yes.
Okay, I won't do the rest just yet. Spoiler warning ahead, though, mm-hmm. of course. Here are the children of the spoil, as is custom. Directed by David Robert Mitchell, it follows represents a breakthrough not just for him, but also its main star, Micah Monroe, who has since established herself as a bit of a scream queen, maybe a bit more than our own Violet Hammond.
Mm-hmm.
It's a horror movie that often eschews the jump scare in favor of the slow build, the tension of inevitability. It has an IMDb rating of only 6.8, but a Metascore of 83, indicating that critics liked it a bunch more than audience members. Heck, this thing even premiered at Cannes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you seemed like you had a fair bit to say when I mentioned 6.8 right there, Violet. So let's jump in with, this is a first time watch for you. It's a first time watch for me as well. So does that seem a bit weird to you? 6.8, a bit low?
It seems very low to me when I started my research because I have heard about this movie, I feel like, since it was released. And since I am not someone who reaches for horror movies, I was never going to really, by choice other than to prepare for this, have decided to sit down to watch it and decide for myself. Oh, thank you so much. I am. I'm so brave. So that... I would never take it upon myself to try to make my own opinion other than to sit here and talk about it with you. But I have always heard it mentioned positively. It's always been, oh, that's one of the best ones. Oh, that's a great horror movie. Oh, this, that. Like, I have never heard people say it's not good. So to see that, to see an audience score like that, really kind of surprised me because I've never really heard a bad word said about this movie. And it does get referenced a lot in, you know, on other cartoons, other spoof things. Like, I feel like this is kind of something that gets talked about a lot. Like, I have heard about this movie a lot. Mm. So for it to not have a more positive audience score was very surprising to me.
Yeah, me too. Same reasons. I also don't seek out horror movies. Just not my favorite genre, I guess. I'm certainly less worried about them than you seem to be. and I wasn't particularly bothered by this one. I think the moment that I felt most disturbed by was actually her chloroforming. Like,
yes.
Like that was without question the most disturbed I was throughout this movie. Mm-hmm. The rest of the time, there were a couple of decent jump scares. I always feel a bit betrayed by jump scares because usually they're just like some fake thing, right? Like when she's mm-hmm. looking through Hugh's house and then the wall suddenly caves in because the sister touched something.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, you know, whatever. that one got me a bit. That one did get me a little bit. But the rest of the time, you saw everything coming. You know, like the thing was always, it gave you some notice.
Very, you know, very slowly.
Yeah.
Just the nerves of that.
And even the one that happens inside her own house where the window crashes, Paul mm-hmm. goes to look, he doesn't see anything, mm-hmm. and then she goes to look. It happens in slow motion, quite literally. Like it's, mm-hmm. I don't know if your eyes were open for this bit, but like the reveal is not, it would be a jump scare in other horror movies.
Yes, I agree with that. Yes.
And it wasn't for this one. So I wouldn't call this one scary in the typical horror movie, I'm going to jump you out of your skin kind of way. It, mm-hmm. As I mentioned, it was much more about that slow build, that inevitability.
Yes.
That moment in her house was not the ultimate scare, right? The ultimate scares were to come later, the terrifying build of the tension. And to make you feel like anyone could be the entity, the thing, the it that's following.
Yeah.
Which I guess is kind of the point.
But I think from talking about this with you in the green screen, because I wanted to, with my theory of what the film represents, what the entity represents, I wanted to check with you about triggers or anything like that. So we did sort of trade theories about it.
We did, yeah.
And we've come to a pretty different conclusion, to be honest. Yeah. Initially,
and
at least.
I think, true initially. And like I said to you, I have read so many think pieces about this movie in the 2 days since I've watched it. And I can pretty much reasonably say that just about every author I've read has a somewhat different version of what the entity is, what it means to them, what it means over, you know, the course and the themes of the movie. Like, it is so open for interpretation that we could literally probably talk about it for hours and everyone would have a different answer.
Well, does that, so basically, you know, you as you said, according to your own definition of data, you watched about 40% of this thing and then listened to 100%. Yeah.
I listened to it, but I definitely had my eyes closed for a lot of it. Yes.
Do you like it? Like, do you think it's an effective movie at the very least?
I know that it did its job in terms of I feel better today about it, but I felt incredibly unsettled yesterday. Like I told you, I was texting Andy during my walk saying like, I can't shake the feeling that something's following me. I keep turning around to make sure that nothing's behind me just because of what this movie made me feel like. I had nightmares. Like it definitely is very effective at getting under your skin in a really, really just anxiety-ridden way of feeling like you're being watched, something's following you, something's coming for you, and there's no way to get away from it. So it creates an atmosphere very successfully that I think is difficult to get out of your head. And I did see that in a lot of the think pieces too. A lot of people and a lot of the critics and the critics' reviews described seeing this and finding it very difficult to get out of the atmosphere of this movie.
That's interesting to me. And I wonder if, so Andy, I'm guessing, handled it just fine, right? Like he did.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't care. Yeah.
Yeah. And Craig was saying that he handled it just fine. And I'm saying I handled it just fine. Are you seeing a common denominator?
Says this is one of the movies that creeps him out. He thinks this is one of the scarier movies he's watched. So.
Who? Craig?
Craig, yeah. But this one freaks him out a little bit.
But he thought it was okay for you to watch it.
Yeah, he thought I could watch it. Ha.
Okay.
But also, like, no one could really understand how much of a scaredy cat I am. Like, I am really bad.
People are probably getting a bit of an impression at this
just
moment.
Just a bit now, yeah.
Okay, well, Craig just sort of ruined my theory a little bit there because...
Oh, sorry.
I think that my reaction to it is the fact that this... Okay, the horror movies that I find scariest are the ones that I feel trigger something in me that feels real, right?
Yes.
Because I don't find I don't find ghost stories that scary because I don't believe in ghosts, right? And if you do believe in ghosts or if you've had a ghost encounter or something that feels like a ghost encounter or whatever you want to call it, ghost stories probably do freak you out a bit more than they do someone like me who is, you know, whatever. Or I'm an atheist. I'm not a spiritual person, right? So a lot of supernatural stuff just doesn't move the needle at all for me, apart from the occasional jump scare or whatever, right? Now, but this one, which features pretty clearly a sexual assault, like, you know, yes, she was consenting to the sex part, but she was not consenting to everything that happened afterwards or specifically what that sex entailed. Now, men are victims of sexual assault overwhelmingly across the entire world in terms of data. Men are the perpetrators of sexual assault and women are the victims of sexual assault. It's interesting to me that this is written and directed by a man.
Yeah.
Because to me, it felt like it would have women reacting more to it and having those reactions you're talking about where you're walking down the street and you just don't know for sure who is a threat and who is not.
Yeah.
because that's not my lived experience. I don't have that experience. I'm a white dude. So that started to inform what I thought was the horror of this thing. This started to inform what I was picking up from this movie. I find it very curious. I haven't done the research into what other people have thought about this movie. I'm not surprised to hear that it's pretty open interpretation. What was the interpretation that you had of what the entity or it or whatever you want to call it represented?
Well, I think the easiest thing and the first thing that comes to mind is a sexually transmitted disease. They even use the word transmit, or that we've transmitted the demon, like, and it just kind of it in that way. And I can't remember if it was specifically put out that way, but I mean, it infected. I'm pretty sure infected was the word that he used. Yes. Yeah,
the ST demon.
Yes, exactly. So like it has that feeling around it. I don't want to say stigma because that's not the word that I want to use, but it just has that feeling about it at first. But I feel like the further you like get under the surface of it, it feels like just the inevitability of death in like full stop. Not even that, like it, not even like a disease, just the fact that this is something that you're going to spend your whole life trying to get away from, and it is inevitable that it will catch you. That's more what it started to feel like to me. But when I was doing the reading of it, I did find at least one essay that had a very specific in terms of like Freud and Jung and all of that psychology in terms of parents and children, and how many times that it does, the entity does adopt the guise of the character's parents, Greg's mom, the, you know, the father, her dad at the pool. Like, how many times that's what it chooses to present itself as, and the horror of that experience. So there is a whole lot going on in here. And I'm going to save some of what I want to say for one of our talking points later. But it is very much left open to interpretation. There is not a lot of answers from the creative team of this movie. Nobody is ever saying like, well, this is what it is. They just let everyone try to figure it out on their own.
Which I appreciate, by the way.
Yeah. But it...
Do you not?
No, I'd kind of like to just know, like, what were you thinking?
Okay,
that I think is part of, like, I don't want to say frustration, but as we discuss it later on down the line, I might as well just like jump into it slightly here. It feels to me a little bit like he said that he wanted to make it sexually transmitted because he thought that that would be an easier way to explain how it went from person to person. But that added on a whole lot of pathos and trauma and things that I don't know if he, as the writer director, explored the way that he should have. And then all of us internalizing it and thinking about it as much as we have put more on it than is just on the frame of the movie, if that makes sense to you. I think each of us watching it and having that ambiguity has allowed us to put so much more on it, where I think at the end of the day, this guy just used to have nightmares of something following him and just wanted to make like an anxiety horror movie.
It reminds me of the thing you hear about. I don't know if you've heard this one before. It's like a bargain kind of thing. Would you accept $100 million, let's say? A life-changing amount of money. But when you accept that money, there is a snail. And the snail is coming after you. And it moves like a snail. It is a snail, right? So it's very slow.
Very slow.
But it is always heading. It knows exactly where you are. You cannot kill it. And if it touches you, you instantly die the most painful death you can possibly imagine.
Yeah.
would you take that $100 million? And how would you avoid the snail?
Avoid the snail? Yeah, what if you're sleeping?
Exactly. But the snail moves like a snail, right? So if you fly to the other side of the world, it probably buys you some time. I imagine the snail can, like, work its way onto a plane or something. But, you know, you've got to, you know, there's still got to make its way as a snail would to you. So you've got to buy yourself some time. And there's plenty of ways you can use $100 million quite quickly. But basically, yeah, that's the bargain, right? This is that in a movie with less rewards and and more. So, yeah, it does feels like an anxiety dream, right? Like
it's an anxiety dream.
Even the thought process of that fucking snail is making you like curl up and be like, ooh, like what if it touches you? One, slimy, gross. And two, instant painful death.
Instant painful death. But David Robert Mitchell has apparently also said that the entity can get on a plane. So he's thought about it enough, unless he just felt like he wanted to mess with whoever was asking him the question that
day. I imagine that's because people would have said, like, how do you get away from it? Like, surely you just, like, get on a boat.
Get on a plane. He's like, no, I can get on a plane. I'm like, okay, does it need to get through security? Like, the further you get into this, the more absurd it is as you're sitting here trying to figure out this stupid thing.
Yeah, they didn't even try, like, going out into the water or, like, going on a plane.
Yeah, well, it can swim. We saw it swimming in the pool. It can swim.
Yes.
It can swim. Yes. Yeah. So it can swim.
I mean, well, it can get shot in the head. It can get shot in the head and survive, maybe.
The video that Craig sent me of how to survive it was using math to figure out, because all of the filming locations are real places in Detroit. So you can figure out by
the walking speed and then
the walking speed of it and where it was. And I think it covers a mile in 20 minutes, which is funny because that's about what I do too. So about a mile in 20 minutes, about my pace.
Are you the entity?
I am.
You have been following us for a while.
I have been. I know. You didn't know all my horrible plans. So yeah, that how you could survive it would be to calculate its walking speed, figure out like where you could go, and then you would have this many hours to be safe, and then you just have to get in your car and go somewhere else, and then wait until you see it. Yeah.
Yeah. Wait until you see it. Make sure you have a full tank of petrol, as we say, gas, as you say, and, you know, then you drive somewhere else, or you fly.
Somewhere.
Yeah, although that would throw out the calculation, though, because of the whole,
yeah,
you have to get on the plane, whatever. But, like, yeah, like, that's true. You'd have, you would have days where you have complete freedom, right?
Yes.
Like, you'd be like, cool, I know this thing won't be here until at least Saturday, so
Friday
is when I'll start to feel a bit more anxious and really prep for this thing. But until then, I'm sweet. You know, that's the way I would do it as well. Let me tell you my theory. I like the one about the death, by the way, because I think the reason the sex thing as being a method of transmission, I actually really like because it's a sign of adulthood. And I feel like kids don't worry about death, right? And I promise you that, I mean, to peel the curtain back a little bit. Violet, you're a little bit older than me and you have kids. I don't. I promise you think about death more than I do. Like, I promise you, like, without question, your own mortality, you probably do. Now, I don't, but I do a bit, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. We all do. Like, we've lost our innocence, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think sex into adulthood is kind of like the point that it becomes something. Now, this is not the first time that this character had sex, but, you know, like, she's an adult now, so she's starting to notice the world around her. But I think it also, I think there's plenty of room for my theory as well. And my theory is that the entity is a trauma attached to sexual violence or sexual assault. So, as I said, I've given a trigger warning at the start of this episode to talk about this. Yeah. But there's so much imagery in this movie that points to it, I think. It's, you know, always, I mentioned earlier, the chloroforming, tying her up. Technically, the sex is not with consent when you factor in the fact that he knew he had the entity and was going to
give it to her. He had this thing that he was going to give to her. Yeah, exactly.
The sex with Paul was consensual because Paul knew what he was getting into.
Yes, he knew everything. Yeah.
But with from Hugh to Jay was not. It was not consensual. The quotes in the movie, it can look like someone you know or a stranger in the crowd. Right? The imagery of being dropped off on the street urgently, crying on the road, cops asking about consent, nobody believing her fully, neighbors saying things like, those people are such a mess, victim blaming, staring at herself in the mirror in her underwear, examining her private parts, you know, like that. Like all of these things feel like the language or the visual language of what we understand sexual assault survivors go through. Things like, you can't tell mum, she'll freak out and won't believe me.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, granddad showing up naked on the roof.
Yeah.
Or dad showing up in the pool to have sex with her, right, to death. Like, that's, to me, like, you can look into, like, oh, wait, did the dad do something? Like, Did the granddad do something? Or is this like our way of talking about cycling through unhealthy attitudes towards sex through the generations? Are we talking about, and even things like the entity, as I mentioned, breaks the window and comes into her house. Were your eyes open for this bit?
Yes.
Do you remember what that person looked like? Like they were, they were like disheveled. Like one messy. Boob was hanging out of the bra. They were wetting themselves, which I believe is something that women are told to do to try and gross out their aggressor.
Yeah, right? Sometimes. Yeah.
So that person got raped, right? That person, that the entity was presenting as somebody that got raped. I can't help but feel like. And then once you are a rape victim, right? Once you, like it could be someone in the crowd. The constant threat of, well, okay, that's it. No one believes me. I'm just going to isolate myself. I'm going to completely shut myself off from the world. I'm not going to put myself out there. I'm going to be a different person entirely. Suddenly, you know, those boys look at me while I'm in the pool and I sit there and say, I can see you, and laugh it off. Suddenly you're not laughing it off anymore. You're scared of those boys looking at you.
Yes.
Suddenly that rape culture that we all live in, which is a very serious thing and a very real thing, suddenly it's presenting itself in a way that you're very hyper alert of and you're constantly looking for it. So while I agree with that reading of being like constantly aware of impending and inevitable death, from looking at this movie and noticing that it's a woman playing it at the center of the film, she's obviously very beautiful. Everyone tells her that she's beautiful. She's the most beautiful girl in the town. You know, everyone knows. All the boys, like, can't help but look at her, like, be it, like, quote, nice guy Paul, or the neighbor across the street, or the boys throughout the neighborhood, or whatever, or her own naked grandfather as the entity on a roof. You know, everybody's looking at Jay. And she can feel it for the first time after that assault. And I would argue that that was sex without consent because of the entity aspect of it and the chloroforming and everything. So that's my thesis. I think it holds water.
Oh, it definitely does. It definitely does. But my counterpoint to it is that what David Robert Mitchell was planning? Or is that just what you and I talking about this have put on it?
Maybe.
My issue is that I don't think that he thought that far ahead.
Maybe,
that's my problem with it, is that I don't think that he thought that far ahead, and it probably tickles him pink that 10 years later, people are still doing video essays and writing written essays and talking about this, and he's just like, great, go for it. 'Cause
11 years.
No. that's my issue.
10-ish years.
10-ish years on its 10-ish anniversary.
No, I tend to agree with that.
Yeah. like, no, I do. I think that it is, in a lot of ways, all of these things. I think that it is that whole horror movie trope of, and because there's no adults in this movie at all, except if they're like, you know, they're
negligent.
The entity. Well, negligent. And then, so that's another very, very horror movie thing. Like the teens are off on their own to become the Scooby gang and try to figure out how to deal with the thing that's following them, which, cool, that is very horror movie, that's fine. And yeah, the inevitability of death and all of the sexual trauma, like, yeah, everything makes sense. And I think that in a way it is saying all of those things, but I think it's saying those things because that's what we ourselves have brought to it.
Well, and so you're positing that that's a criticism of the writer director, because it's you know, to put words in mouths or whatever, it's quote not that deep, at least the way that he wrote it, and then the way that we're interpreting it is deeper than it actually is. Is that your position?
Yeah, you, me, and a ton of other people, like, and some of the things that I read about this, they're mad at this movie for the things that they say it's saying. There, I was reading feminist critique where this was, you know, complete and utter exploitation and torture porn by what is being done to Jay, in terms of she was not given all of the information. She was not able to consent to being passed a sex demon that she then would have to pass to someone else in order to save her own life.
What a horrible
she
position.
Then needed to, she needed to take on the situation of knowing that if I give this to someone else, it's going to kill them. And then when it kills them, it's going to come back for me. And I'm going to have to do it again. So there are a lot of people who watch this movie and that makes them angry. So there's a lot of feelings and emotions involved in watching this movie. And it's not just, I will say it's successful in that if you can watch it, and it makes you think this much, and you take this much away from it, and you're able to talk about it like we're going to for all this time. Like, obviously, it's a successful piece of cinema. Obviously. But I just don't know how much of it he intended it to be.
No. I tend to agree that he probably didn't intend for all of these readings. But at the same time, it's like, even if you accidentally succeed, I think it's still worth praising. You know, like I sometimes think of being the coach of a sport team or something. They're the first person that gets blamed if the team loses, and they're one of the last people to get credit if they win. And I think, well, you know, this guy wrote and directed this thing, right? He's chiefly responsible for how it turns out. A lot of people like it, particularly critics.
Yes.
Even if it's accidentally deep, I think I'm willing to give him some credit for that, because he made something with broad enough strokes that it was, I mean, it was suspenseful and terrifying for certain people, and also has enough in there that you can just pick at it. And you know, I think the sexual abuse angle works well. I think the fear of death angle works well. I think the STI angle is there. That's pretty, I mean, I think it's right there in the text for sure.
Oh, it is. Yeah, that's the easiest thing to take from it.
I think so. It's the first thing that I thought as well.
Yeah.
When I heard the premise of the movie. And then when I saw the chloroforming, I was like, oh. Okay, maybe not, but yeah, anyway. And what, like, she has to live her life, and like, the director apparently has said, like, condoms wouldn't have saved them here. Like,
no, I don't think that
sexual health wouldn't have saved them here, which I think kind of speaks against the STI angle, but that's my different reading of that situation. But I don't know, I'm willing to give credit even if it's accidental, which is interesting, I suppose. I want to talk about Paul.
I would love to talk about Paul. I'm going to jump in with one more thing there, though.
Okay,
before we move on, because you made a very eloquent and very, like, well thought out thought about the entity in the house as that woman who was urinating on herself.
Yeah.
And he was asked, why did he do that? And he was like, I don't know. I just thought that was like the most messed up thing that you could see. So he did not think as deep into it as you have. This is you and the kind of like compassionate person that you are. And that's the view that you brought to it. But this dude was like, I don't know. It's a horror movie. That's messed up. So
he just wanted titties out for the boys. Is that what we're going with?
To freak people out. I think he really did just want people to be like, oh man, this is freaky. But we are sitting here and putting, and I don't think that it's not there. Who knows? Some of this could just be like, I'm getting interviewed by a reporter and it's my bravado. I just want to say, like, I didn't think that much into it. That's possible too, because I don't think there's any way that you can have a movie with this many layers and this much depth and not have at least some of it be thought out in advance.
I agree with that. You've heard of the performative male trope?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I actually think, because I've been told that I'm a performative male, right? Because I have been trying to dress a bit nicer recently. I listen to different music and watch different movies, and I'm a feminist, right? And people sit there and go, and I wear tote bags sometimes, and people will be like, oh, performative male, right? And I'm like, actually, you know what? That's me at my least performative. When I'm being performative, it's when I'm hanging out with other dudes. Like, it's when I'm hanging out at sport clubs or something, you know, and they want to, and I want to try and fit in and not rock the boat too much. Like, I don't generally join in with like the really gross misogynist bullshit that happens at those sort of things or homophobic stuff, but just like the general tone of my behavior changes significantly. And I do wonder if I wrote a movie and I wrote it with a level of depth, and I was trying to, A, misdirect the audience a little bit to make them think of it for themselves and not give them any answers, and B, trying to be a bloke, you know. Like, would I sit there and say, nah, man, I just wanted to make her piss herself. You know,
yeah.
Like, would I do that?
Freak everybody out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wanted to do some fucked up shit. I just wanted to see her titties. You know, like, because that's me being performative. You know, that's me being the performative male. And that's actually, as a man, like, you know, like, not the poor guys, the poor men, right? Let's not go down that road too much. But let's just say that as a man in this society, you are taught that you have to be like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the performative aspect for me, is fitting in with people in my life who are like that and trying to do it in a way that's true to my values, but not ostracizing me from communities. And so I don't know. Again, it could not be that deep, and that's a pretty compelling piece of evidence you presented there. Yep. But it could also be a performative male thing, in the true sense of performative male. But I don't know. Like,
well, yeah, who knows? Who knows if this dude just like says stuff just to, you know, to get the spotlight off him, because like, I really, how do you know? Like, I don't think that you could create something like this.
Thoughtlessly.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I tend to agree with that, but it's an interesting one. Let's do my favorite thing and talk about the men.
Let's talk about Paul.
Let's talk about Paul. Now, how are we reading Paul as a woman, you know, as someone that has been a teenage girl who has definitely had friends or boys interested in you and blah, 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 blah. How are we feeling about Paul and Greg? Let's talk about Greg as well, because Greg's right there and Greg's very different.
Yes. Greg was very different. Greg is more like, talk about not that deep, right? Like, he just does feel very much like the hot popular guy who lives next door. Mm-hmm. And I think in the end and on the page, he was a means to an end to show the audience how serious this was. Mm-hmm. That was kind of where that's where I got with his character. I think Paul is more interesting. I'm not saying he's a better character, but I do think he's interesting. He so desperately wants to save the damsel in distress throughout the course of this movie. Like, he wants to impress her. He wants to be the one to save her. He wants to be the one to defeat the creature. And to what end? Like, is it's just to, is it because he is in love with her, or is it because he just wants to make himself feel better? I do think he has a lot of layers, and he's an interesting character. I don't think I like him very much, and I especially don't like what he does at the very end of the movie. That bothered me a lot.
Yes. So let's let's dig into Paul, because I think this is interesting, because I think Paul is written thematically to be an authentic character, to genuinely love Jay, right? And this is a shortcoming for me. And it's in the writing. I think David Robert Mitchell thought, okay, Greg's the jerk.
Yes.
He's the one that has, you know, family trauma from mum. Isn't your mum going to be upset that you're taking the car? I don't think she'll even notice, you know. Yep. He's the one with family trauma and whatever, and he's the one who's being performative in the way that I was just talking about, you know, like, gotta get the chicks and be the cool guy.
I'm the cool guy, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm going to get that sex, and I'm going to fucking bounce, you know, like, that's Greg. Okay.
Yeah.
Whereas Paul, I think, is written to be authentic and to authentically love her. And if you go with my reading of the film being about sexual abuse trauma, okay, how do people get through that? Well, one way is to find a reason and a way to go on living. Now, like, the best revenge you can get on your abuser is to have a good life anyway, right? Yes. Or to have a life. And one reading is that at the very end, like, this is a person that understands her trauma as close as anyone can possibly without having it. And then decides to be like, hey, I will share this with you. You know, like, please share it with me. I want to share it with you. I want to hold your hand through this trauma.
Yes.
That gives her the strength to go out and continue living, right? That's thematically a very nice way to do it. I think it's also a thematically naive way to look at men and the way they operate in the world. And I couldn't help, like, so I'm reading it in that way, but I couldn't help but look at him specifically and think he's not authentic. He has feelings for Jay very clearly. But at every turn, I think he's got an angle. And I think the angle is trying to have sex with Jay.
Yeah, of course.
And you're saying, yeah, of course. I don't think it's yeah, of course, to the author of the film.
Really?
I don't think so. I think he's written Paul to be an authentic, loving, holy character, basically, like an angel.
He gives her a hard time about having sex with Greg.
Yeah.
Because it should have been him. And it's like, guy, we are in the middle of an emergency.
Yeah.
Like, we're in the middle of an emergency. Like, is this really what you want to, like, give me a hard time about right now? Like, that, like, and it's because, but I love you. Like, he's an interesting one.
So you got the same impression as me that he was nice guy, TM, capital
nice guy,
N, capital G.
Yeah. Yes. He's paid his dues. He's been sitting there waiting for her to notice him for however many years. You know, you owe me. It felt very much like that. Whether or not the writer director intended it to be that way, I don't know. Again, but no, I agree with you 100%. Yes, that's what I felt about him.
He gave me the ick, like, very early on, like. Not like the first thing he does, but one of the first things you do is you notice that he's being A, bullied in that group, and B, it's like, oh, it's a book called The Idiot. It's about Paul. And then Paul goes, hey, Jay. And she goes, hey, Paul. And you're like, oh, that's Paul. Okay. And then as she leaves the room, his eyes follow her. Okay. We know that he's in love with her or lust after her or whatever. That was fine. It was not long after, though, that I started to be like, oh, this guy's like, yeah, he's the guy that sits there and goes, hey, I've put the nice coins in. When does the sex come out?
And I will save you. I will save you. I will be the one to kill this. Thing. Like, it is not a selfless act that he is trying to kill this thing. It is because he wants her.
Yeah. That's my impression of Paul. And to me, that's what brings the film down a little bit, is that I believe that the very male writer of this film has written Paul to be like the savior in a good way. And it's come off as, oh, the savior in a bad way. You know, the savior in a selfish way.
Yes. Not for any other reason other than she was something to be acquired for his whole life. That is what it is. You want to know how many reviews and things I read that said the ending of this film is hopeful? Hopeful. They're still being followed. The last frame of this.
We're pretty sure they are, at least.
Pretty sure they're still being followed, even though, and I'm going to jump in right here because we're talking about him. He very clearly goes to a sex worker to pass this thing on, right? Did you get that impression too?
I also got that impression.
Yes. So, which is really disrespectful. that's one of the last things you see in this movie. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Are you serious right now?
To use gross and vulgar language for a point, well, it's just a hooker. You know, it's just a hooker on the street. Oh, well, no one's going to miss her. It's going to buy me some time.
It's no, like, not even that. She's going to pass it on to someone else before she even knows she had it.
Well, actually, that's something.
That's something. And then someone else is not going to have any idea. And then this, but it, you know, it's just.
They'll get murdered quickly.
Murdered and then they'll go after the sex worker. That's the thing is that's the real terrifying thing, is that it's not like you sleep with somebody else and the thing is just gone. When they finally get that person, it comes back for you. And then when it gets you, it goes to the person who gave it to you. Like, it just doesn't go away. It's inevitable.
And the thing is, we don't know. We don't know that the entity or whatever is still alive. We don't know for sure.
Yeah.
Because we see, like, you know, the pool of blood, which we have not seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then, like, you know, it had the opportunity to get her as she was reaching over the pool, which I thought was like the fucking stupidest thing you could do.
Yeah. And that was going to be the last jump scare, right? That's what I was prepared. I was prepping myself for that. Yeah. But no, it was just the visual of the blood filling the pool.
She finally takes on final girl, you know, energy. No, it didn't happen. And okay. So, and then we have sex because we like each other, maybe. I don't know. Maybe it's an insurance policy. Maybe he feels like he'll then pass it on, and maybe that's part of the plan, which makes her a repulsive character as well as she's in on it.
Because she'd be in on it, yeah.
Yeah, and then we finally have the ending where they're holding hands. They're both wearing white for some reason at Halloween. I don't know. There's a lot of symbolism in this movie that you could read into. And then there's something following them.
There is something behind them. Yes.
Yeah. Whether it's the entity or not is actually kind of irrelevant. It's the point, to be honest, because the point is the ambiguity, I think. And if you read the sexual abuse thing like I do, right? Like, okay, we've got this person. She's a sexual assault survivor. Here's the person that she's sharing that grief with, who's helping her through it.
Yep.
They're holding hands. They're walking down the street. They're trying to be normal. But yet there's that nagging feeling that still, despite the fact that you feel like you've beaten it, it still might be there. We don't know.
Yeah.
We never know. And I kind of like that about the ending, but I don't know. I'm very torn about this movie. Like, when we talk about whether I like it or not, yes? Question mark?
I think I appreciate it for all of the reasons I've given. With the fact that it is so deep and layered and interesting and worth delving into and discussing. But I can't see myself ever watching. Like, I don't know if I would ever be able to bring myself to open my eyes for all of it. Like, it is, I know you don't find it scary. I found it deeply, deeply frightening and unsettling. I was very scared by it.
Well, you're talking about going for a walk and feeling scared. And to me, that sounds like what women go through anyway.
Every day.
Alex had a lot of energy yesterday. We were both home from work, and I was less energetic than she was. And she's like, oh, I might go to a class, like a Pilates class, or I'll just go for a walk. And she did. She went for a walk. I didn't join her because I was like, mate, no, I'm not moving. I need to watch this movie again. And so she went for a walk, and then she actually came home quite quickly because it was getting dark.
Yes. No. Agreed.
Right? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, that wouldn't be a factor for me.
Yeah.
But it is for her. It is mm-hmm. for you. Right. Mm-hmm. This is the lived experience of women. Right. Is that it could be someone that you know. It very often is. When we talk about sexual assaults and murders and things like that, it's very often someone known to the person.
Correct.
In terms of data, it's the vast majority.
It is, yeah.
But it could also be a random person on the street. It could mm-hmm. be. And that's the power of the film for me, is that it taps into that. And
it does.
As a man who goes against the grain and cares about women, I also, you know, I worry about these things. Like, you know, I appreciate that Alice came back when she felt scared, because it's like, yeah, cool. Like, don't risk it, you know.
Like, good. Like, yeah. Make sure you're safe.
It sucks that you have to feel like that, but I'd rather you be safe, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what it's tapping into a bit, but I don't think it's capital G great.
I don't think it's capital G great either.
Wow, look at us. This is interesting.
Yeah. No, I think it's capital G good. Yeah, I think it's definitely one of the better horror movies. I think there's more behind this than just, you know, some guy running around with a knife killing teenagers because, you know, they had sex with somebody in a cabin or something, you know, which is what feels like a lot of horror movies are, at least like the slashers, like the 70s and 80s slashers. That was the purity culture of it, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, I mean, that's just the trope. So yeah. I do appreciate how it uses that horror movie trope to give us this really interesting story. But and I think that you're absolutely right about how it does tap into that real life anxiety of, it could be somebody you know, it could be somebody you don't know, because that's like the entity appears as, it could be somebody you know, it could be somebody you don't know, could be a stranger, could be your mom, could be, you know, it's, that is the anxiety of, anyone I know or don't know at any point in my life can cause some kind of harm to me. How will I ever know?
Yeah.
Will I see it coming?
Yeah.
That there is so much anxiety in like every frame of it.
Yeah. And to expand it out slightly beyond sexual abuse or whatever else, an anxiety that men also feel. I mean, obviously men can be sexual abuse victims, et cetera, et cetera. Women can be perpetrators. This is a thing. Statistically, it's a lot lower, but it's a thing for sure. So this exists too. But just the anxiety of being betrayed, hurt, you know, abused as a kid, hit, mentally, emotionally stunted because of things that happened in your past. Like, this is a relatable thing. And men get cheated on too, or whatever. And next time you go into a relationship with a girl, are you constantly worried about that? You know, are you constantly looking over your shoulder? Are you constantly wanting to check her phone or whatever? You know, like, this is an anxiety that exists for a lot of people. I just think it's very specifically for women. Specifically about safety and sex. So I just wanted to point that out, broaden it a little bit for people that might be accessing this film in a different way. But to me, that's the one that stood out. You also touched on some of the influences from the past, the purity culture of the 70s and 80s. One thing I found interesting about this movie, one of my favorite behind the scenes, not even behind the scenes, but interesting things about, or facts about the film, is that the timing, like the time of the film, is intentionally vague. You know, it was like intended to be so.
Yes.
This whole idea that they're watching old as shit TVs.
Yeah.
But, you know, the first victim has a flip phone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, or like, you know, old mate is reading Dostoevsky off a clam.
Yes.
Kindle or something. And
so weird.
But they have old cars and old TVs. And
You have no idea what time this is. You have no idea what's going on. It's very specifically Detroit because it is, they did film in real locations, in real places. And like, I knew it was Detroit, but
they talk about 8 Mile too.
They talk about 8 Mile. Exactly. So like they, you know, the place, but you have absolutely no idea what time this is. And that was his plan, the David Robert Mitchell, because this was inspired by his dream of someone following him. And he wanted to make it specifically like a dream world. That's why so many things in the movie don't really feel real, because you can say that it's because it's, we're following Jay as our POV character and she is all over the place and not sure what she's seeing is real or not. But when you are dreaming, you have that moment of, am I asleep? Am I awake? Is this a real thing? What's this strange thing in my hand? Where am I? Like, it, that's the feeling that the movie has the whole time. And I did like, and could pick up on that he was inspired by like John Carpenter. Like it was so obvious. Like the music felt like it. The camera shots felt like it. Like it did feel like those really creepy, like The Fog or The Thing, like real, those real atmospheric horror movies where you feel like if the camera just went like just a hair to the left or the right, something was going to be there that was going to get you. That was the feeling that I felt like the whole time.
And the way that it slowly pans much. Like, just slowly panning. And you're just like, oh, God.
Oh, God, what's going to be there?
Yeah. And then nothing. Or, like, it is someone walking in their direction from across the courtyard. You're like, oh, God, here it comes.
It's like, but is that
they don't even know.
Is that it? Is it not? What is it? Is that a person? Yeah, just the way that it made me feel was very effective. So I have to give it its flowers in a lot of ways, but
yeah. Well, that was my favorite fact about the film, that it was intentionally time period vague.
Yeah.
What about you? What, do you have any favorite facts about the film or behind the scenes or that we haven't already talked about?
That was kind of my favorite thing about it too. And I mean, I think that we really, under What Makes It Great, I wrote the ambiguity, but for me, that is also a shortcoming because I, as we've said throughout the course of this, I don't know how much of that is just him like, well, it was a dream. It's not here to make sense. It is what it is. And I mean, he probably just, like I said, loves that it's a decade plus and people decade-ish. Are still decade-ish. And yeah, people are still sitting down and watching this movie and trying to like tear it apart and putting, maybe it's a really good thing and a compliment of it that we put so much of ourselves into it, into our watch of it. It shows that you can really take this seemingly simple premise and it really has this deep chasm of things attached to it that means something different to everybody.
Speaking of premises, right? The premise of this show. I used to do an advert, you would have heard it, I'm sure, across like different networks and stuff for this show. Art doesn't change, right? Like, you know, 11 years ago when this thing was made, it doesn't change, but it does change because we change and the way that we perceive the art changes, right?
Exactly.
It's why Van Gogh is more famous now than he was during his life, Mozart too. You can go on and on and on about these sort of people, but like even just a movie like this, you know, we have you and me seeing it differently and we think very similarly about the world. I'm sure Alex would see it differently again if she had the bravery to watch it like you did.
40% of it.
You mentioned that Craig had a theory that was slightly different to ours as well. I'm sure Andy has his own reading of it. Ian too. Shout out to them. Yeah. They are not with us right now. I like that. I like that. And that to me makes it art. I just wouldn't call it capital G great. Capital G good is a good way to call it. Maybe
capital G good.
G. Yeah.
Yeah.
But capital F favorites. Before we get into favorites and MVPs, is there anything burning in your pocket or are you happy to start winding up?
No, I'm ready to start heading this up and I'll give you like a little spoiler. I didn't even write anything down for favorites because I couldn't wait for this to be over. I was so scared.
Okay. Well,
and it's not in it. That's not to say I didn't like it. I was scared. I was like, oh my God, when is this going to be done? Least favorite is definitely when Paul goes to the sex worker. That actually made me angry. Yeah. I was angry at that. But
yeah. Well, likewise for me with the sex with you.
Yes.
That was like, it's hard to watch, especially because you know that this sort of stuff, I mean, you know, the it following thing is not something that happens, thankfully, but, you know, sexual violence like that happens, like power plays from men particularly happens, and it's horrible and it's life changing, particularly for the victim. And, you know, like, we're not doing enough as a society, are we? We're simply not, particularly as men. But so that was hard to watch. That is not one of my favorites. I agree with you that the implication that she was going to go out onto the boat and have sex with those dudes, maybe.
Yeah.
Like that might have happened. They might have died.
We have no idea. Yeah. That felt like part of this like dream world where it's like, did that happen? What? Like, and because it, I mean, I know I wasn't watching and I wasn't really paying attention, but like, that never really came back up again, right? So it's just like, what the hell was that?
The first time I watched this movie was on my brother-in-law's Amazon Prime account. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't pay for no ads. So there was two sets of ads in this film. And one of them was like, she's taking off her clothes. She walks into the water. Ad.
No.
The ad goes for 2 minutes, and then the next thing you see is her driving home wet. And I'm like,
what?
I think the ad substituted part of the film out. So I went back to see if I missed something, because in the space of 2 minutes, I kind of zoned out a bit, checked my phone, okay, back in. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wait, I've missed something. What the hell? Wasn't she about to be on a boat? And then I went back. Yep. And no, it's just like a hard cut, very ambiguous, deliberately.
So, yes, very much so. Did it happen? Did it not? What's going on? Who knows?
But yeah, terrible place for an ad, let's just say that.
Oh, yeah.
another reason to cancel your Prime subscriptions, ladies and gents. fuck Bezos. Okay, so my favorite scenes. I thought the opening was very effective. You know,
the opening was scary. Yeah, got me right in it.
The panning around the neighborhood, the way her leg is disfigured. Holy heck. In fact, you can't see the threat. It doesn't show you the threat. You can't see it.
You just see the aftermath. Yeah.
Is the naked Greg's mom, by the way. That was Greg's mom. Sorry, not Greg's mom. Hugh's mom.
Hugh's mom, yes.
So when she goes to the door and it's Hugh there.
Hello. Yeah, it's her. I know.
Crazy stuff. Crazy work. But the opening is chilling. I think that was really well done. I think the scene where they fight the entity on the beach is really cool. Like where it grabs her hair.
Yes. Yeah, yes. It looks cool. And I liked that they believed her from that point. That is important for our little Scooby gang, which I do like that aspect of it. Yes.
Yeah. I agree wholeheartedly. I'm a sucker for mise en scène, which for the listeners that might not be familiar with the French term for mise en scène, it basically means the way things are arranged on the screen. So blocking of characters, for example, is really important. And the fact that you can see four people on the beach. Mm-hmm. You see Greg. We know that there's five people in the gang.
Mm-hmm.
Four people on the beach.
Yes.
You see Greg leave.
Yep.
So there should be three people on the beach. We don't know where the other girl character is. And then we see, you know, her walking towards them from behind. Right. So, okay, there she is. Cool. We got it. Mm-hmm. And then we see her float out on the water into frame, and it's like, oh God, that's her.
Yeah,
that other thing walking towards her and they can't see her.
They can't see her.
The only person that can see her is Jay, and she's not looking that way. She's gonna, like, how did she get out of this one? And then for some reason, the entity grabs her hair, I guess trying to mess with her, maybe? I don't know. Whatever. But that was confusing. But gosh, did it make for a good scene. And the kid, the neighbor kid that pervs on her when she's in the pool, coming in through that hole, like screeching, bit of a jump scare.
Yep, that one's scary.
But even like the tall dude, apparently he's like one of the, like, there's twins. Mm-hmm. They're the tallest twins in the world. He's one of them. And he 7'7" or something, and he just like, you know, he walks past the window and it's like, this is so, like, that was a good scene. I really liked that scene. And I liked the pool scene.
Yeah, well, the end, the pool.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. No, I liked all the, like, simple, practical, effecty kind of stuff, like throwing a towel or a blanket on it so that it's like you can't see it, but now you can at least see the form of it. Like, I love all of that kind of stuff.
Yes.
But it was terrifying. I was scared.
And, like, old mate, like, shooting at something that he can't see with his friend in the background. It's like, what are you doing, man? That's crazy stuff. God. Like, shooting her in the leg.
Yes.
Anyway, that was one thing I found very unrealistic about this film is that she was, like, suffering in silence after getting shot in the leg.
Yeah.
And I'm like, mate, you'd be howling.
Yes.
You're a teenage girl that just anyone getting shot in the leg, but
anyone getting shot, a teenage girl
who is not used to that level of pain.
It's like, you have to be quiet. We're fighting a demon.
I don't know. Maybe she's getting like level 10 period pain or something and she's used to it. I don't know. But like, she was
a trooper.
She was very calm through all that. She was still pretty focused on like, hey, is Jay okay?
Yeah.
which is, you know, that's pretty good.
That's nice.
Pretty
true
good friendship.
True friendship.
Let's talk MVPs.
Let's.
To me, it's pretty obvious. I think it's the the clam Kindle containing Dostoevsky. Like, what the hell? I want that.
Yes, it definitely is. That's one of the greatest props ever constructed for a film, for sure.
Like, honestly, given that Amazon Prime ended up distributing this thing, right? Did they have like a clam Kindle? Do they do some merch or something? Because that's cool as shit.
I don't remember anything like that.
not super practical, but like the whole time she's just like glued to this clam, and it's like, I don't know.
MVP. I saw when I was doing the research, I saw somebody put it up next to like SpongeBob or something because it's a clam, and it's like,
oh, of course,
there's a meme of it. Yeah, there's some good memes for this.
I haven't seen them, to be. Or if I have seen them, I didn't know it was from this.
You didn't know, yeah. I got Andy with that for Empire Records. He's like, yeah, I've seen a lot of this online. Had no idea it was this movie. I'm like, mm-hmm, yep.
Good episode, by the way, Violet. First official edit to land. Well done. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
In our group chat, you mentioned that we were watching It Follows and that you were having a tough time. And then Ian sent through a GIF. And the GIF that he sent through.
Yeah. Was the giant scary man coming into the room. And what did I do? I just wrote stop in all capitals.
Yeah, as if you could like unsubscribe from the chat. You like, know, like how you get those text messages from like businesses being like, to stop these messages, just text back stop.
Stop. I was like, Ian, for real? Oh, my God.
at that point, I haven't seen the movie. So I'm just like, oh, wow, that looks really scary. I assume that was the main character that was getting like enveloped by this thing. And I'm like,
yeah,
hang
no.
on a second. Doesn't
somebody who had no idea it was there
when it touches her or whatever. Like, that was a good jump scare too. I liked that scene as well.
Comes out of the darkness. It is filmed very well. It is. Yeah. It's photographed very well. It is.
Yes, I agree with that. Credit to Mike Gillakis shot this
nice
film. So credit to Mike. I want to also give credit. So while we're doing MVP, by the way, let's talk about some candidates. So obviously David Robert Mitchell wrote, directed this thing. It is eerie and tense, and credit where it's due.
Agreed.
Micah Monroe, big breakthrough role for her as Jay Hite. I think she's got a really good case. I agree that Mike Gillakis does a really good job. There's some in-camera effects that I think work really well, like the sheet going over
the thing. Yeah,
I assume there's some dude wearing a green suit, you know, maybe, or a blue suit, you know. Disaster Piece, who did the score for this thing, and it's funny. Yeah. Have you seen Marcel the Shell with Shoes On?
I've heard of it, but I have not seen it. Yeah.
Violet, mm-hmm. The strongest recommendation I can give to someone like you is to watch Marcel the Shell with Shoes On.
Okay.
It is so fucking adorable.
Oh.
It's so cute. It's in, and it's so funny. It's Jenny Slate, right? Like, it's so funny.
I love her. Yeah.
It's so funny. And heartfelt and everything. It's just mm-hmm. like you will cry. I apologize in advance.
That's fine.
Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, watch that movie. It is so, so good. But I was listening to this score being like, you know, like the way they use the synths is a little bit similar to Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. And I'm actually a bit proud of myself. I think noted author Sean Wilson would also be. It's the same person.
It's the same person?
Yeah.
Oh, you good. You picked up on it.
Yeah. Oh. So I'm just like, oh, shit. Reading The Sound of Cinema has paid off.
I've
leveled up. Yeah, I've leveled up. But Disaster Piece hasn't done much in terms of the composing, but that's two of the things.
It definitely contributed to the atmosphere, and the atmosphere of this movie is terrifying. So
absolutely. So there's a few good candidates there. I'm not sure if mm-hmm. you have any others you want to throw in the mix, but
nope, you've mentioned mine. So
excellent. Well, who is the MVP?
Micah Monroe. I really got to give it to her, because you really care about Jay and what happens to her, and she's so expressive in this film with her eyes. I really felt like I could feel everything that was happening to her through her eyes, and I really, really enjoyed her performance, even though I was terrified.
I agree. We haven't given her flowers yet, but mm-hmm. we are going to, both of us. She is the MVP, Micah Monroe. She's Scream Queen personified, and even more so now with a couple extra mm-hmm. films under her belt, like Watcher, which doesn't really throw many surprises at you, but is still a heck of a creeper. And yeah, that one lays it on thick with the women feeling unsafe thing.
Cool.
Yeah. So beware of that one. And also Long Legs, had her in it as well.
Oh, yes.
So she's really making a name for herself. You mentioned it's her subtlety and her performance that I really enjoy as well. There's no big, like, you think of Scream Queen stuff, mm-hmm. you think of, like, big screaming moments and, like, huge amounts of tears. And, she does scream a little bit, but it's usually muffled by the sound design mm-hmm. or in slow motion, like, for example, in her kitchen. Or, like, she does cry and stuff, but she's not, like, it's very believable, I think.
It's not showy.
Yeah, yeah, she's not going for it, capital A acting, right? But like mm-hmm. I think she's integral to this thing working.
Oh, yeah, I don't think it works without her. He could have that amazing idea and put it like, you know, script. What I wanted to find, and I haven't really found it yet, but what I wanted to find was something that illustrated the relationship between director and actor in a way that made me feel like the things that worked in this movie or the things that I was feeling and responding to in this movie were from her. And I can't quantify it, but in my heart, I feel like that's what it was, because I feel like I said, this guy put down his anxiety dream, but it was her performance that made it feel real and made me feel like what I was feeling in response to it was from her, I think.
And one thing that I noticed was, so on the clam, she was reading the Dostoevsky book,
Idiot.
The Idiot, that's it. And
And it's like, what happened?
And thanks, Napoleon, for that. It's The Idiot by Dostoevsky. And are you familiar, by the way?
I've never read it, no.
Me either.
I'm familiar with it, but I've never read it. Yeah,
yeah, me too. And so I did a bit of reading about it just to make sure. And the central theme of The Idiot is that Prince Myshkin is like the ideal man, this positively beautiful individual, this person that you plug into the world and they're just so virtuous and they're so good looking and so intelligent and so likable, right? You plug them in a hope that they might take the corruption of the world and turn it in their favor. But unfortunately, the corruption of the world defeats Prince Myshkin. That's basically the vibe, right? The corruption and the ugliness of the world overrules the beauty of an individual. And I think she embodied that. I think at the start of the movie, she's beautiful. She's so funny. She's likable. She sees the guys perving on her across the fence and she goes, I can see you, you know, and like, she's so like, whatever, and a great sister. And she plays a trick on her sister with the wet hair, and she's kind to Paul. She's, you know, she's just like, even Paul, like, oh, like, you know, the girls are talking about, oh, she's annoyingly beautiful. And Paul's like, well, at least she's nice.
Yeah. You know, she's a good person. Yeah.
She's a good person. She is the ideal person. She's a positively beautiful individual, quote from the book. But what does the world do to her?
Yeah.
The world makes her somebody that is willing to pass on this disease to somebody else. This world makes her scared of the world. The world brings her down. That's The Idiot. And that's what she brings to it. I think she brings subtlety to that to make it very in the text. You have to really, really in the context, rather. You have to go and look for it, the subtext. But it's there. It's all there in her. And I think she is definitely the MVP. So I'm glad we agree.
Yeah. Yay. Hooray. Good. I'm glad.
Violet, anything else before we hit the frog and toad, as we say in Australia? Have you heard that one before, the frog and toad?
I mean, I know frog and toad, but I don't know in what context we're using it in Australia.
To hit the frog and toad is to hit the road.
We're
going to
hit the road. Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, the only other thing I will say is that I suffered through a horror movie for Halloween. So happy spooky season, everybody.
Happy spooky season to everybody that celebrates. We even sat through one that's 11 years old for you.
Yes.
We broke
our own rules.
Oh, gosh. As somebody that, like, again, I'm not diagnosed with any particular neurodivergence, but I feel like there is like a bit of like a autistic traits, you know, and like this 11 is it's stressing me out. It's stressing me out.
I know. What are you going to put on the artwork? Are you going to say 10 or 11?
Oh, God. Yeah. I think I might say at 10-ish.
At 10-ish. Yeah. Or just say Halloween special. Happy Halloween.
I think I'll say Halloween special. Yeah.
Halloween special.
Thank you.
Yeah,
for that.
No, yeah. I get it. We had that moment where you're like, it's a 2014 film, and then we said, "Do we do it?" And I'm like,
"But it's so textually interesting."
It was so interesting, and I wanted to talk about it, and also I didn't want to have watched it for nothing.
There's that. Yeah. There's that. There's like that.
I'm like, no, we're talking about it. We're doing it.
You pulled rank, and it was, you know what? It was a good chat. I'm glad we had it.
No, this is great.
Violet, you've been a bit more busy than me in recent months on the podcasting world. As I mentioned, you had your first edit that dropped recently. We've got another one that will be in our feeds already.
Yes.
Your conversation with Ash Thomas, the nerdy blogger, about Tank Girl. I'm looking forward to hearing that one, actually. I haven't seen that movie.
Well, I will say, and also for anyone who might be listening to this for whatever reason, because it's Halloween or because you like It Follows, if you haven't gone back in the feed, Ashley and I specifically, because it is a movie that a lot of people haven't seen, tried to keep it as spoiler-free as possible.
Oh, cool.
So if you listen to the episode to hear us be very feminist and very anti-capitalist, which I know are things that you will be very happy about.
Say less.
I know. So if you listen to this episode, you will not be have any major spoilers for Tank Girl. And it is a movie that is free to watch on most services like Tubi and things like that. So it's easy to get a hold of. And it was a first time watch for me and I would highly recommend it. So,
well, Ash has been begging me like ever since like last year, she was like, Bo, we're doing Tank Girl next year. Tank Girl turns 30 next year. We're going to do Tank Girl. And I'm like, I think this is a Violet one. I think this is
where it was.
The girls club comes together and does a movieversaries episode.
And it was, yes.
So I'll have to watch it on Tubi or one of those services that I do have access to. Mm-hmm. And also Three Circles going well. I've been enjoying some of the episodes. I haven't listened to all of them. Admittedly, I've been busy with traveling and everything. But
I know, you've been busy.
But also I haven't seen all the movies that you've been covering.
Well, some of them you never can. If you actually like sit and watch, you know, Gold Rush and Alaskan Adventure like on YouTube and then listen to that episode, then I commend you because you're not going to go find like a, you know, Disney Sunday night movie from 25 years ago and watch it of your own accord.
No.
But yeah, Three Circles has been a ton of fun. We're just talking about all things Disney with Jeff Owen.
Yeah, I mean, and you guys have a great chemistry. I love Jeff. You love Jeff. And yeah, looking forward to more of that. And so, by the way, anyone that wants to listen to Violet's other show, Three Circles, or anything else that you're in, Violet, because you keep your Linktree pretty up to date, is to go into the show notes and you'll be able to click on a link in there that takes you to Violet's Linktree and you'll be able to find all that stuff there. And while you're there, you also have my Linktree as well. Violet Hammond, thank you so much for joining me to talk about this terrifying experience for you.
Yeah, I was scared, but I'm very happy I did it so that I could talk about it with you.
I'm very glad that you followed through with that promise. If that can use that. Really, that's a bad pun. That's not even a good pun. Let's just ignore it. Let's hope that the audience also ignores it. And I've had fun chatting with you. I hope the audience also has had fun listening to our episode. If you have had fun, please subscribe to Movieversaries if you haven't already and give us a like or a review. A 5-star review would be great. 5 stars for Violet for toughing out It Follows. Please.
Thank you. I want a cookie.
How do I get a cookie to you? I don't know. We'll work it out. I used to work at Subway, so I used to make my own cookies, you know. Make my own is a strong word for that. As I mentioned, you'll find all the links to all our stuff in the show notes, so please do go check them out. There is also a link to the small but growing Discord where we have a bit of a chat. So if you want to chat with Violet, want to chat with me or Andy or Ian or a few other people that are in there, that's a good place to do it. It's free. Come on in and we'll chat about movies or whatever, really. We often chat about other stuff.
Yes.
thanks again for your company and see you for the next installment of Movieversaries.